Hello and welcome back to Invisible Illnesses, episode 3. I'm Steve Warbooth. I'm a GP with a special interest in functional illnesses. And before we start, just the usual disclaimer. None of the information given here can be specific to you or others you might know, and is not a substitute for assessment and guidance from your own doctor, which is what we would recommend if you or someone you know has concerns about your health. Okay, so I'm joined as ever by my cousin Alex Warbooth, who I think's got something special to report today. So what have you got for us, Alex?
Pleased to say that we're joined today by Kieran Wilcox. Kieran, we've known each other for a couple of years now, but I think it's your first time meeting Stephen. So great to have you on the show.
Very nice to meet you, Steve, and good to see you, Alex, as always.
Yeah, good to meet you, Kieran, and hi, Alex.
Hey there, Steve. So in terms of our episode today, you've told your story before to me, and I think there's lots in there that'll be really interesting and relevant to our listeners. But perhaps let's start by you telling the listeners a bit about yourself, your background, and how you got here.
Sure. So I am 43, recently 43, and I'm used to be fairly fit. I aspire to be very fit again. I am a civil engineer. Two kids, a fantastic wife who's given me a lot of support through what's been going on of late, and my sort of relevance, I guess, to you guys in to this discussion and this sort of illness piece is that I've had a very active and professionally challenging and quite high-flying role for sort of 15, 20 odd years at university, and then I became quite ill about 4 years ago, and have had quite large periods of time off work, and have been working to return back to work. I'm pleased to say that I have largely returned back to work, but it's not been a smooth process and it's not a complete process. And so hopefully that will give a little bit of I was going to say insight. I think that probably is a little bit bold. I don't know whether it will or not, but certainly it's an experience that I never expected to have. Still, I'm surprised to have had and to be having. Can't really fully explain, but understand others have had similar experiences. The more I look into it and meeting you guys, understand more people have perhaps experienced this than I had appreciated, and that. Even though that is the case, the causes are unknown. So,
yeah, and I think that's actually a really nice point to start us off with, actually, Kieran, because I think that's actually the first thing I'd say is, you know, you're definitely not alone in this, and that's certainly been my learning from having had conversations with Steve around this as well. So I think that's actually right, and yeah, be interesting to hear more about it. So, Stevie, is there anything you want to ask from your perspective?
Yeah, no, I just echo that. I mean, I don't know your story yet, but why don't we hear some? So do you want to perhaps if you go back in time to 4 years, how things started to go wrong, and you know what you were feeling and what was happening?
Yeah, so it's probably worth painting a quick baseline picture, which is something I've tried to do each time I've met a medical professional around this, because if they don't know my previous baseline, it's difficult to be able to compare current. And it always makes me sound slightly big-headed or braggy to talk about it, or I fear that perhaps it does. But the baseline was marathon fit. Lots of triathlons, living life very much to the full, alongside a demanding professional role. So, leading team of 300 or so folk doing complex things in the engineering and development space, alongside an active family life, playing with the kids, all that sort of stuff. And I never found this thing about work-life balance to be a problem, because I just did all of it and it was fine. And I have recently learned, through this process learned that turns out that if you overload the seesaw at both ends, it can snap in the middle. Whereas I thought it was okay because both ends were in balance, but turns out it can snap in the middle for whatever reason. So I was happily sort of living this high octane, high travel, high work sort of life. Then COVID came along, and in about 2 weeks into the first lockdown in COVID, through various conversations, I ended up in Cardiff in charge of leading the build. I was the build director for the COVID hospital in Cardiff, where we converted the Millennium Stadium into actually pretty close to a functioning hospital. CT scanners and oxygen and all that sort of good stuff in the first couple of months of sort of March, April, May of 2020. Fantastically enjoyable experience, albeit pretty high pressure and high stress and travel and all that sort of stuff. I came out of that feeling exhausted, which was not a huge surprise given the time pools that it had had, and went into that COVID summer. And if you remember that first COVID summer of 2020, we had the initial lockdown, then the release, and people could travel again. And I travelled in that summer, and I worked from Germany and Italy, where I have family in each place. We spent the summer there, and then came back in the early autumn. And I, unexpectedly and out of nowhere in the early autumn, having been a bit tired and run down over the summer, possibly as a result of just overexertion, I got an acute infection, which flattened me for about 2.5 weeks. I spent about 2 weeks in bed, which is something I've never experienced before, with sort of man flu-y, extreme, well, maybe not extreme, but certainly severe headaches, flu, sniffly, that sort of stuff. Did the COVID test, which at the time was still relatively rare, but you had to queue up in a car park to get your COVID test, which turned out to be negative at that time. After about 2 weeks, it kind of subsided. I went back to work, but really was struggling at work when I went back. I found I couldn't concentrate. I couldn't really think clearly. I was struggling to be sort of competent at home around that. And by that time, we were sort of coming into late autumn, sort of into December time. And somebody at work, after watching me struggle for a couple of weeks, said, "This is silly. It's nearly Christmas. Take an extended period off, 6 weeks, 8 weeks off, have a proper break, come back in the, come back in February time." Which I did, took that time off, felt a kind of a bit better because I wasn't working, stretching myself so much. So I could have came back, had a phased return in February, March of 2021, in which unwisely I then got a big promotion at work because a job came along that I had been looking for a while. Got that promotion, got into that. "Are you sure you're okay, Kieran? I know you've had a bit of time off. Are you sure you can take this promotion on?" "Yes, I'm sure." "Are you really sure?" "Yes, I'm sure." Turns out I wasn't right.
Was that March?
So I went into that promotion. New job.
Yeah, 2021.
That was March, yeah. So that was March of 2021. Went into that promotion and I managed to do it for about 2 months. So March, April, and in May, I just couldn't continue and fell over completely in May 2021. And what I'd found
what
was...
What were your symptoms?
Sorry, go on, Stephen. So symptom, yeah, absolutely. So symptoms were excessive and highly burdensome tiredness, sort of this crushing tiredness, which I could describe as, if you've ever done a sort of a long distance endurance thing or a half marathon or even a 10K, depending on your fitness level, you get to the end of it and everything feels leaden and really tired. But when you do that, that's counteracted by endorphins, so the fact you know you've done something and you know it's going to fade away. But what I found is I had that sort of feeling and it didn't fade away. Very intensive headaches. I felt sort of like a permanent hangover. So if you feel really hungover and you sort of your coordination's slightly off first thing in the morning when you're trying to like pour your first glass of water or something and your hand shakes a bit and you can't quite, you've got to concentrate that bit more. I had that almost all the time. I couldn't concentrate. I couldn't answer simple questions or do silly things like putting the bread back in the fridge and the milk back in the cupboard. If I was trying to make breakfast and losing the ability to cook alongside talking to the kids. And what I found was that in a work context, I could engage it was progressive in a work context that I was able to go back, I was able to impress in the interview, get the new job, etc. In that sort of short capacity of time. And then progressively, I was unable to, the first thing that went away, I was unable to complete tasks independently. Then I was unable to concentrate and recall information that I'd been given. And then I couldn't even sit through a conversation like the conversation we're having now, at the height of it. I couldn't sit through that without being exhausted. Well, either losing train of thought on a regular basis or being really tired by the end. And then by the time I actually put my hand up and said, I can't do this anymore, I actually could barely leave the house. My sort of physical level got down to very, very low levels, levels I couldn't have imagined. So I went off then in May 21, and I was off completely through until February 2023.
Did you try doing stuff that you used to love, like exercise and things like that? And how did you feel when you tried to do exercise?
Yeah, I did. So running was the main way that I stayed fit. Running and swimming are the main ways that I stayed fit. What I found was that at that stage, I could physically go for a run, like the muscles worked. But when I got back, you know, and I'd get sort of a ringing sort of feeling in my head, and it would be a bit disconcerting. But I'd push through that because I'm, you know, used to pushing through pain and whatever. But then when I got back, I would just be absolutely flattened to the extent that I could barely get up and move around.
How long after the run would that hit?
Almost straight away. I know there's we've explored this quite a bit with the various doctors that I've seen about post-exertional malaise, which is the sort of the impact and lag. And I've never been able to satisfactorily fit into that box, because sometimes it's been straight away, sometimes it's been longer, and sometimes it's been, I've not been able to tie it directly to a direct piece of exertion. What I've found more is that the analogy that seems to work better for me is a tank of reserves, that when it's full, your tank of reserves, you can take a little bit out of it by going for a run, say, or having a late night or you know, something like that. And you take a bit of tank out of the reserves, but because your tank of reserves is sort of generally filling up over time, you fill it up by having a sleep, you don't go to the bottom of the tank by that exertion because you're within your reserve range. You fill it up again, having had a sleep, and then you can carry on. And you can quite happily, your tank can go up and down within its range. And what I've found is that my resilience, or sort of the contents of my tank, has been gradually reducing until it feels like I'm now at the bottom of the tank. So by a combination and compounding and sort of additive elements, so that any sort of exertion had made me hit the bottom of the tank. And then I was stuck to the bottom of the tank for a while. And alongside that and compounding it was that what I lost, having never had problems with sleep ever before, is I just wasn't sleeping. Tired and wired was the best way, was the phrase that sort of clicked for me when I heard it, is that I was too tired. I was so tired that I was wired all the time, and that made me unable to sit still, yet I couldn't move. And so trying to do stuff, so the thing that I've really struggled with when I was off for all that time, which was the better part of you know, a year and a half full time off work, and then a very, very slow phase return, which we might talk about if it's relevant, leading up to, you know, best part of 3 years in all, is learning how to rest. Because people used to say, take it easy, build in periods of rest, avoid boom and bust cycles. And I found that really difficult because I never used to rest before. I was never somebody that used to do some stuff, get tired, and then sit down to recharge. Like, I know there are some people who are, not to broad brush, but introverts who, you know, you exert your energy, you then need to sit back and recharge, read a book to recharge. Well, I would recharge by going and climbing a mountain and then sitting on the top and thinking, oh, this is wonderful, you know. And it'd be mental recharge, but I never, over 20 years of activity, I never found I needed that sort of slow down physical recharge. And so it was difficult to find it when all of a sudden I was told to go find it.
And I was going to ask, in that period, you know, when you said you talked to your colleague who'd said that, you know, in the autumn, take time off until February, that period of time where you weren't working, would you describe that as resting? Would you say, did you rest in that period, or were you just doing family stuff and other forms of keeping yourself busy?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I probably was doing more busyness than perhaps would have been wise, but I perceived it as rest.
Mm.
You know, your perceptions are slightly different. So I certainly wasn't going out sort of doing, so, oh, I've got all this time off, I'm going to go and, I don't know, remodel the garden or anything like that. But what I was doing was I would still cook dinner.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Christmas happened in that period. And so I had a sort of normally participative, or I tried to be normally participative over Christmas.
Yes.
The cooking and prep and things. Probably it was less than I would normally do, but I sort of tried to still stay engaged. And it was better by the end, but not as better as I'd hoped, and not enough.
Kieran, can I ask, at that time, I'm guessing you were off work, so you were definitely seeing doctors and stuff like that. Two things. What did you think was going on? Did you have lots of tests and stuff like that? And I'm presuming a lot of these tests came back negative or unhelpful. And how did you feel as a result of that?
So I have had lots and lots of tests, but they generally happened later. So in that first period, I thought what happened was I've had a really stinking flu, and it's taking me longer to get over it than expected. Possibly combined with the fact that I recognised that coming out of the COVID hospital experience, I was knackered. Because alongside that, at the same time, it's sort of a perfect storm, really. So just before COVID, our second child was born. So we had a baby at home, and we knocked down half the house for an extension, which was happening at the same time as well. So the sort of builders were in, and it was disrupted and all that sort of stuff. So there was a lot going on. And so I thought, oh, you know, it's fine. It just takes a little bit longer to get over this thing. So the initial sort of GP level appointments at that stage didn't show anything. It was like, well, the COVID was negative. Maybe that's a false negative. Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't. Don't know. Standard blood tests showed elevated infection markers consistently. Really high elevated infection markers. High ALT. Levels, but nothing else that was instructive at that point.
And what's ALT? Sorry.
So it's a liver enzyme.
It's a liver.
Can go up with a lot of different viral infections. It's not very specific, and we could go on for all sorts of other things as well, which I would presume you were tested for. Glandular fever screen. I presume you had that.
Yeah, yes. Which showed I'd had it in the past. Yeah. Epstein-Barr virus.
Yeah. Yeah.
There ended up being, so at that point actually, but at that initial point we didn't know. I didn't really know any of that. It was just at a GP level. I'm lucky that I have private medical insurance through work, and we really explored that in the time that I was off, fully off, in the following summer, and I saw. An epidemiologist. So what's the name of the blood doctor again? I've forgotten.
Hematologist.
Saw her and ended up at an infectious disease clinic.
Mm-hmm.
And I've ended up with a long list of positives from the past, which included chikungunya, which is a tropical thing, bilharzia, which I did know that I had in the past, which is a thing you get from water worms, if you go in the tropics. We found alive or possibly reactivated, they couldn't tell, for leptospirosis. But the key thing they think was an element, the key thing they think that may have triggered it as a viral piece is they found Babesia in my blood, which is a Lyme's-like infection, as I understand it.
Mm.
And the reason I mentioned in the introduction that I'd spent that COVID summer overseas in Germany and in Italy, where I spent quite a lot of time outside, slept outside a few times, it was hot, and take the kids out for camping kind of thing, is that they actually have quite a lot of it in southern Germany where we were, and they vaccinate for it there,
right.
Whereas they don't over here. And it's a thing you get from a poppy seed sized tick, in its baby phase. So you don't necessarily. So I never noticed getting a tick bite, but they found it eventually as a live infection at the end of 2021, and then treated for it with antibiotics. 21 into 22, which was a year after I'd first had the infection. And that was the start of then my slow return back to being able to consider starting to return back to work, and a very slow return back. Now, that on its own, we don't know whether that was it on its own or whether it was that in combination, possibly with the COVID or not. I was certainly in a place where my colleagues were catching COVID in and around me in the hospital when we were working on it, at a time when we weren't testing particularly. So I don't know. I don't know what the eventual trigger is. The way I tell the story in a short form is tick bite, tick infection, like Lyme's disease, probably on top of not having looked after myself very well for the 10 years before. Then recovery back. That's the sort of short form of it.
Yeah.
Of course, there are layers within that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And when you got that diagnosis with the tick bite, which the tick-borne illness, which seemed to make sense as a trigger or a contributor, did that give you a sense of relief? Or
yeah, it did.
Yeah,
actually, it really did.
Yeah,
it really did. From the point of view of my own understanding, the way I can communicate this, and also because there is still stigma around doing this to yourself through burnout, which is there's definitely a contributing factor to that, potentially.
Yeah.
How much of it I don't know. I will always wonder if I hadn't had a tick bite, would this have happened anyway? 1 year, 5 years, 10 years, or not at all? I don't know.
I think it's difficult to know, isn't it? It's really interesting because actually, what you're describing is a situation that is somewhat different to most of the people that I talk to in this situation, because most people don't ever get a positive result that they can attribute their diagnosis to. I think for many of them, there's little doubt that there was a viral illness at the start or before it, but that's based on symptoms, the kind of symptoms you described, Kieran. But you rarely get sort of serological, that's to say antibody-based tests that prove that you had a cold, for example, or a flu or something like that. Yeah. And then we see a lot of people with an illness that's, symptomatically, similar, very similar to yours, for which there was never any infectious prodrome, if you like, that they were aware of. But again, often people are presenting a year or 2 years down the line, and how do you remember whether you had a cold 3 weeks before all the symptoms started?
Just one thing I wanted to ask you about was around that conversation we had a couple of weeks ago when we were chatting about this, and I think it was interesting that one of the things you said to me was that people seem to really jump on the tick bite elements of the story, and for you, I think... Could you explain a bit more about that when you talked about that's the bit people seem to focus on and how you felt when you got that kind of reaction?
Yeah, people do tend to focus on the tick bite element of it, and I think probably I lead them in that. I certainly focus on the tick bite element of it, and because it makes sense. And most people's attention span is not that long. I'm bored with this whole story, to be honest. I live it every day. And it makes sense, and it has it's that sort of arc of story of villain and crisis, but then recovery and hope. Because it also suggests that it's a thing that I will completely move past, and I've made huge progress, but I have not moved past it completely yet.
So is that something that's important to you then in terms of the way you see it yourself, in terms of saying there's nuance here, there's elements here, we're here where it's not just as simple as, it's not as binary as tick bite equals problem, antibiotics equals solution. Is that something you'd say?
Yes, there's definitely nuance. And trying to separate out the different elements of it is a complicated thing in my own mind, I think. I need to do that in order to be able to respond properly, but equally I probably do fall into the thing of saying, well, it's just I had a tick bite and now the antibiotics, I will be fine going forward, whereas actually the consequences, whether it was just from the tick bite or the build up or other contributing things, is that I will have to behave and work differently for a sustained period of time and possibly forever. I don't know yet. Maybe it's worth at some point, just if it's relevant to think, just talking about the extent to which I have returned and the functionality I have got back to, because that's not straightforward either, really.
Yeah, I think it would be good to talk about where you are now, how you approach the day-to-day life now and how that looks different from you now, if you think this sort of pre-event and post-event. How would you describe where you are now?
So to add that into the timeline, so I was off full-time from May 21 to February 23, so that's sort of 18 months or so. In February 23, I started a very, very, very slow phased return to work, by which I mean an hour a day, 3 days a week to start with. And then I was adding an hour to each day every month. So for the first month, it was 3 hours a week, then it was 6 hours a week. Until after about 6 months of doing that, I'd got up to the stage of working 3 days a week. So sort of September 23, I was working about 3 days a week, at which point I could do things usefully at work, because obviously when you're working a couple of hours a day, a couple of hours a week, you don't actually do very much. I was doing sort of 50-60 hours of quite intensive work. So I started sort of September 23, I was working 3 days again, starting to do interesting things, starting to do useful things, contribute, which is also a big thing, because maybe this is a tangent, may not be helpful or not, I don't know how relevant this is to others that you see, Steve. I was really surprised how much I identified my sense of self, or sort of bound up my sense of self with my professional self and what I was achieving and my work. And when that was stripped away, it was quite a wrench, actually. Made me not look forward to retirement particularly, or certainly not a cliff edge retirement. And so it was very helpful to start feeling like you're contributing back again to work. And my work had been very supportive, and so feeling that I can contribute something back is useful. So I worked it 3 days a week for about 6 months through to about this time last year. Sorry, I know this is a convoluted timeline, but through to about February of last year, 24, at which point I was like, right, I'm ready to go up to 4 days and to do something proper, because 3 days was still a bit restrictive as to what you can do. And so I moved up to 4 days about a year ago, almost exactly a year ago now, and changed roles into a role not as difficult as what I was doing before I got ill, but an interesting role. I was working on an international development program, program director for that, and looking after various teams. And I've done that for a year, and it's what I found is it's too much. And I've gone back down, just in the last month, I've gone back down to 3 days a week. Because what I found was that things are starting to symptoms are returning, capability and capacity were reducing. My sort of analogy of the tank was, whilst I'd over a year, and I've been tracking, I'd be interested, Steve, if you have a comment on this as to whether you see this in your other people that you speak to, but I've been tracking things like heart rate variability using, you know, commercial tracking wearables and resting heart rate and things like that. And what I found is that my resting heart rate used to be really low. I was very fit. And now it's really high. It doesn't drop below 70 and sometimes 80 overnight when I'm asleep, which I assume contributes to feeling knackered.
Well, it's interesting. There's a lot of unknowns there. I mean, the first thing is that you asked before is, you know, what do we think about that thing about your sense of self being stripped away and how that was bound up with work. What I see a lot of the time is that seems to be utterly at the core of these illnesses. So the kind of model that we're seeing is that yes, you have some sort of insult to your body, and in your case it's a physical insult, and in many people's cases a physical insult, whether it's a back injury which stops somebody from working, or it's an infectious disease that stops somebody working. But this doesn't we are not robots, and robots are complicated in that there's lots of wires running in linear ways, but humans are complex in that there's constant feedback from different areas, okay? So nothing happens in isolation. So at some level, I would propose that even early in this illness, when you're not recovering from your flu-like illness, I am certain you've had, flu-like illnesses in the past, but there will have been points that this felt different, even within the acute illness, and in the recovery phase, and that difference sits outside your norm and creates some level of worry, anxiety, stress. It would be very strange for that not to be the case. And that degree of stress response produces real, measurable physiological changes. And then they're never exactly the same thing, which is why we don't have diagnostic tests that we can employ in this situation. But we know that overall, people who have chronic fatigue syndrome or fibromyalgia have many different measurable in research settings, neurotransmitter and brain hormone levels and activation states than people who don't have these illnesses. So things often relating to cortisol production, so the adrenal brain adrenal axis. So we know that if something isn't running the way it should, then that produces a stress response, and stress response produced physical symptoms. And at the heart, the kind of physical symptoms that a stress response produces are the kind of physical symptoms that stop us doing stuff, because we're still primitive animals. That is, we're not primitive animals, but we still have much of our wiring dates from our primitive times. And if you've got an animal in danger, then you want it to stop doing whatever it's doing at the moment. And pain and fatigue are stop signals which stop people doing what they're doing at the moment. Kieran, you wanted to say something?
It's really interesting you say that. I particularly like the complicated piece, because that's something I talk about at work in a different context, but it's exactly a very similar thing, that something that's complicated can be defined and measured, and they might have a million moving parts, like an iPhone. There's no moving parts, but complicated parts, but you can make them by the million, you can define it and you can deal with it, whereas complex you can't. A shoal of fish has only got four rules, that don't get eaten, don't leave your neighbor, stay with the pack, but you can't model it because it's different in every time, and this is a similar thing to it.
It's a great analogy. It's a great analogy.
Yeah, and so that's that complex, and this feels like a complex thing, not a complicated thing. And you talk there about that physical stress response, and that's how I think about it. That's how I describe it as well. It's a physical response to stresses, and to stress environments. And it's weird, because you said I would be weird, it'd be weird if you didn't feel anxiety. I think I genuinely am weird in that respect. And this is one of the reasons why this is such a strange experience for me, that if you were to range anxiety from 0 to 10, your bell curve of where people fall on it, some people obviously can be very anxious, most people are in the middle. I'm right at the bottom of the bell curve generally. I don't feel anxiety. I don't feel, I screened for depression about a dozen times through the early stages. I even took, they put me on antidepressants for a couple of months. I said, well, just try it anyway and just see. And either failed or passed the test, depending on which way round you look at it, with all of them. And because they genuinely don't feel sort of anxiety and things like that. And I'm starting to get a bit fed up four years in or so. And yet, even though I've sort of always been like that, I now get a physical response. So I don't feel anxious, but I notice my heart rate goes up, or I get the headache pings in, and to just what used to be normal stressor environments, really, or even low stress environments.
It's really interesting I guess, Kieran, that you must recognise that there's something of a disconnect there, that you've said, I think I'm unusual in certain ways, in that you've been able to talk about bits of your job, even pre-illness, as challenging, yeah, and or as periods of life as stressful. So there's something that you're recognizing or identifying as a stressful experience, but something that you're not identifying or recognizing or experiencing as you would understand it to be anxiety. And I guess, you know, I see a huge range of how people express stress. You know, we all see this in everyday life. We see people who are very overt with their distress. You know, people who might cry very readily, or people who might get very overt, anxious, express very anxious thoughts about all sorts of scenarios. But there are lots of other people whose stress is a bit more, I don't know, internalized, if you like, you know. And there's a huge spectrum of normality there as well. But all humans experience stress, and that's part of our survival. You know, it's wired into us. And I wonder if, and I've only just really thought about this now, and maybe it's popped up on odd occasions, is if you're somebody who has managed stress in the most, you know, highly effective way, if we think about functionality, let's say, in a workplace. So if you're doing, let's say, a very challenging job where a whole lot of different stuff is coming from different directions, the last thing you need is somebody who's panicking and can't think straight and is projecting anxiety into the team and the room. And probably what makes you as successful as you are in these jobs is that you're somebody who
is that I don't.
You don't do exactly any of those things.
And that I seek out those situations because I enjoy them.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing. I don't think it, because I think of stress as negative, whereas actually I think, so I probably do experience it. It's just I seek them out because they were stimulating. And
So what I would say, the model I would use to think about you as part of the spectrum of normal humanity, is that we often find this model of an animal brain or a mammalian brain, which is deep at the back of the head here, and then your intelligent human brain, your cortex, up here at the front, and sometimes, you know, they're in slightly different places, and your human brain, your cortical kind of responses, are different to many people's in that you don't express and feel anxious thoughts, but maybe your mammalian brain is pretty similar to all the other mammals, and is generating all that stuff, and does that put you at a slight disadvantage in these situations, in that you haven't perhaps got the early warning that some other people might have, when so you've had to relearn in a more mechanistic way what it is that's a stressful and potentially problematic situation.
There's something in that, I think.
I'm conscious we've covered a lot of ground here, and it sounds to me like this is a conversation we could have lots and lots more in the future. And it would be great to have you come back and chat to you more about the things, you, if you're able to, Kieran.
Sure.
But I think probably what I want to do is just bring it to a close now. But first of all, a huge thanks for taking time out and sharing so openly about your experiences, because I know this stuff isn't always easy for everyone to talk about openly. And it's hugely useful for people listening to this, I think, to hear your story. But I just wanted to check in. I mean, how's it felt talking about it now today? And now, how's that conversation felt to you?
I'm absolutely fine. So I have no problems talking about it. It's been the major topic of life for the last four years or so. It's become a bit dull from that perspective, but of course it's so important to my sort of everyday existence that it, you know, that sort of counteracts it. It's actually quite helpful to, I think you're helping me think about it in slightly different ways, that element about the sort of stress thing is not something that's ever been said. I've spoken to, I don't know, tens of doctors at various different stripes. I'm engaged with some the specialist services as they exist. I am engaged with and have, and they've not talked about it quite in that way before, which is interesting. I'd be very happy to come and talk further if you think there's other things that are of interest and might be relevant to you guys in your exploration of this topic and that might be of interest to others.
Brilliant. Thanks, Kieran. And thanks everyone for listening. See you next time.
Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot. Bye bye.